26th. I'm your host, Jared Holt, and welcome to Shitpost. This is an episode about the Lincoln Project, a name now synonymous with anti-Trump campaign ads and social media personalities. If you've watched MSNBC or CNN in the last year, there's no doubt you've encountered one of its founders making an argument presented as GOP principled opposition to Trump. I've been wanting to do an episode dedicated to the group for a while because they exist at the intersection of internet and politics that we cover here in a very prominent way. Now that that group is seemingly starting to dwindle after the 2020 election has come and gone, I thought now would be the perfect time to finally do that episode. Joining us later in the program is Scott Stedman. He's the founder of Forensic News. He was among the first to break news of a scandal involving a leader at the Lincoln Project last year, which ended up consuming the group in a fireball of scandal. But more on that later. In late 2019, current and former Republicans came together to found a PAC, a Political Action Committee. It would come to be called the Lincoln Project. George Conway, Steve Schmidt, John Weaver, and Rick Wilson, all former GOP consultants and campaign workers, announced the formation of the group in a New York Times op-ed. Here's some of what they wrote. Patriotism and the survival of our nation in the face of the crimes, corruption, and corrosive nature of Donald Trump are a higher calling than mere politics. As Americans, we must stem the damage he and his followers are doing to the rule of law, the Constitution, and the American character. That's why we are announcing the Lincoln Project, an effort to highlight our country's story and values, and its people's sacrifices and obligations. This effort transcends partisanship and is dedicated to nothing less than the preservation of the principles that so many have fought for on battlefields far from home and within their own communities. This effort asks all Americans of all places, creeds, and ways of life to join in the seminal task of our generation, restoring to this nation leadership and governance that respects the rule of law, recognizes the dignity of all people, and defends the Constitution and American values at home and abroad. Throughout the 2020 campaign season, the group would go on to craft and distribute campaign ads against Donald Trump. Many of those ads were even seemingly designed to specifically fuck with Trump's head. Here is one of those ads titled Rats.
The rats are leaving the sinking ship, Donald. Bill Stepien and Jason Miller know it's over. Even Jared knows. And you know what they're doing?
He's test for it.
Spinning to make themselves look good, saying it's all your fault. Blaming you. Calling your ad strategy half-assed.
Greatest station ever to exist.
Too small to move the needle.
They're not small, are they? I never heard that one before.
Spending the last of your donations. There's no strategy.
FEMA allocated.
They've blown it.
What happened? Was there money that just disappeared?
Nothing's working. You're losing.
Could you imagine if I lose? What am I going to do?
And they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Ads like Rats were met with jubilation from the resistance as it exists online. Hosts at networks like MSNBC and CNN fawned over the group's leaders. Online crowds who hated Trump went nuts for the ads. I got the impression that some saw the Lincoln Project as a group who could rat-fuck Trump the same way the GOP has been rat-fucking the Democrats in the media for decades. And the money flowed. Boy, did it flow. Open Secrets reports that the Lincoln Project raised $87 million and spent nearly $82 million of it during the 2019-2020 election cycle. The Lincoln Project as an organization eventually grew to have about 40 employees and, you know, just as many interns, if not more. But critics of the organization have questioned how effective the group actually was. David Sirota and Andrew Perez, two progressive reporters, wrote in Jacobin that the group was a giant grift. They wrote, "A group of longtime Republican operatives depicting themselves as anti-Trump stalwarts convinced liberals to give them more money for ineffective television ads and stunts than was raised by the Democratic Party's national campaign to win state legislatures. The result? Donald Trump won more Republican votes than he did in 2016, as Democrats again lost state legislators in advance of redistricting that could determine the control of Congress for the next decade. Meanwhile, the GOP operatives are reportedly positioned to go from lighting liberals' money on fire during the 2020 election to now using liberals' money to launch a media empire that could push a new Biden administration to the right." Several other people have criticized the Lincoln Project along those lines, and that criticism grew after the election. In the interest of fairness, I do want to recognize that the Lincoln Project was successful to many extents in what it sought to do. A lot of the ads prompted responses directly from Trump. They definitely were messing with his head while he was in office. The ads also achieved a degree of online virality and potentially raised the hopes and passions, especially of older Democrats that were opposed to Trump. But whether or not the Lincoln Project moved the needle, especially to the degree you would expect a group that has raised more than $87 million, is really contested still to this day. And in the light of all that criticism, the Lincoln Project would go on to find itself in a hell of a scandal. Joining me to talk about that scandal and the future of the group is Scott Stedman, the founder of Forensic News. Joining me now is Scott Stedman, founder of Forensic News, and the first, I believe, right, Scott, to report on the scandal that ended up kind of inflaming the last month or two of the Lincoln Project. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
So, you know, prior to this conversation, I've been going through on the episode kind of detailing the history of the Lincoln Project kind of all the way up until about Election Day. But since Election Day, all is, you know, seemingly not well with the Lincoln Project. It's come under some increased scrutiny. And I guess, you know, without giving too much away right up front, you know, can you talk about some of the scrutiny that the group has been facing, both in regards to the scandal you reported on and also just maybe more generally?
Yeah, so I guess even during the election and after, there were a few studies that came out just politically about how little of an impact the project was actually having on their main goal of sort of converting the sane conservative voters to Biden. And there was a few studies that came out that basically said, hey, that, you know, they're not doing anything and they're not changing any minds. It's kind of just fodder for liberals to pretend that a bunch of Republicans were jumping ship. You know, so that's kind of the lowest of the totem pole in terms of scandals they faced. Basically, half of the money that they raised, a little bit more than half, went to firms that were founded by the Lincoln Project founders. So it was kind of just a laundry machine for Steve Schmidt, Rick Wilson, John Weaver, and the others to basically pay themselves. So like $27 million out of $80 million plus went to actual ads and actual voter outreach stuff. The rest of it was basically just a way to pay themselves.
Yeah, that's something that I came across a lot, which is like in the campaign, or I guess the group financial disclosures. Because it kept going to these different kind of subcontractor groups, if you look at it from like an open source campaign finance angle, it's kind of hard to really know exactly where all the money was going or, you know, purportedly for
what cause. Right, and it seems deliberate. Like they would create new companies and nobody would really know who was behind them until, you know, until after the election, like they had to file certain disclosures. with the FEC to show where the money was going. And it came out that a lot of the companies that were newly incorporated were actually owned by the guys at the Lincoln Project. And that's not to say that, you know, all of the money that they spent was just right back into their pockets. Like, certainly these companies did some sort of work. They created, you know, pretty high quality ads, but it was definitely a way to kind of hide who they were paying. And the more and more that comes out, it looks like it was just themselves.
Yeah. You know, the Lincoln Project at its peak had something like 40 employees and like just as many, if not more, interns working for them. So, you know, presumably this group is doing something. And, you know, I agree the ads were high quality, high production value. They were certainly, I think, arguably successful in just fucking with President Trump's head while he was in office.
Oh, totally. I mean, he responded directly to a few of them. So I guess if that was their goal, then maybe good. And I think I should also point out, like, another thing that those studies that I mentioned didn't really look at is enthusiasm for, like, Democrats. Because I do know that, like, a lot of sort of older Democrats loved those ads and still stick by them to this day. So I think that may be a little bit underappreciated in terms of turnout. We don't really know how effective they were, but, you know, it's certainly high quality and got the attention of Trump. So I guess that's one of their goals.
So that was kind of its own thing. That's kind of the criticism that, you know, earlier in the show, I read a little bit from the David Sirota piece in Jacobin calling the Lincoln Project a grift. I don't know that I would go that far, but, you know, that's kind of the line of criticism initially that was coming at the Lincoln Project, especially in the aftermath of the election. But then something else happened, and this was something you had reported on, you know, months before it kind of broke into the mainstream, but there was a scandal, and a pretty damn bad one at that. Going on inside the Lincoln Project, and a lot of questions about who knew what, when. Can you tell us about what you've reported and what's happened since?
I'll back up and say that I had a professional relationship with John Weaver, one of the co-founders of the Lincoln Project. He worked for McCain and for Kasich, Kasich's campaign manager in 2016. And, you know, I started writing a few years ago, and John was one of the first sort of big names to reach out to me and say, you know, hey, I like your work. And, you know, for me, that was a big moment because I was like still in college. I was 22. I was like, oh my gosh, a former campaign manager for very high profile politicians is like interested in my work. You know, we'd go back and forth sending messages, keeping up with the news and whatnot. And it wasn't until I would say 3 months ago or so that I started seeing some chatter on Twitter about him sending sort of unwanted messages to young men. And subsequently, I posted a Twitter thread about a couple of messages that he sent me that kind of made me uncomfortable. You know, he called me my boy and said, like, I had blonde hair at the time. And he was like, you know, it's so sexy, like, keep your hair. At the time, I kind of just laughed it off and was like, okay, this is kind of weird. But like I would make jokes to my friends about it. But it wasn't until I started seeing these kind of Twitter threads in the last few months that I felt compelled to kind of share that experience of being like a little bit uncomfortable with what he was sending me. And right after I posted my thread of the messages that he sent me and how I felt about it, my DMs were just absolutely flooded with people around my age, young men around my age, who got similar messages as me and a whole lot worse. So after I posted that thread, I realized, like, okay, this is a huge deal and nobody's really talking about it.
Yeah, at that point, it becomes not just sort of these weird messages, but a pattern of behavior.
Right. And the more I was hearing from these guys, the more kind of fucked up the stories got. It wasn't just sending flirtatious messages. It was, hey, I can get you a really good job if you come meet me at my hotel room. One of the guys whose emails I reviewed, like, John Weaver sent him a dick pic with no warning. Like, the guy thought he was sending him an article. And he opens his email and it's that. So, I mean, there's even more. Like, some of the guys actually went to his hotel room and, you know, he asked them to do all kinds of things while at the same time promising jobs and lucrative trips. And one of the guys I even talked to, John Weaver, said that he could get him an internship at the UN if they hooked up. So, you know, I'm not lying when I say this is dozens of people. Like, I lost count of how many people contacted me. I think I stopped counting at 40. And so this kind of resulted in an article that I wrote for Forensic News, the company that I founded. And I wasn't the first to raise the issue entirely, but I was the first to connect it to job offers and the more kind of explicit details.
So that was reported out over the weeks and months to follow. The story would get more traction, eventually landing in places that are considered the banner newspapers, the legacy media, right? Washington Post, New York Times, they've got articles about this. And the Lincoln Project is forced to respond. How did they respond?
So initially, they didn't respond to me at all. I gave them a bunch of opportunities. I emailed them, I called them, and they didn't respond. The next publication to sort of pick it up was Axios. They reported some more details. Well, John Weaver himself gave them a statement saying, you know, he apologizes if anyone was uncomfortable, but he felt that everything was consensual, which I knew from talking to the guys that, you know, 90% of it was not consensual. And it made them, you know, they're still very guilty about what happened. And the Lincoln Project gave Axios a statement just saying, you know, John's statement speaks for itself. So they were very clearly trying to make this go away without any sort of publicity. They were trying to just let it die away. And then, like you said, the bigger papers picked up on it, like the Times and the Post, adding even more details. I think the Times was the first to report that John Weaver was messaging underage people as well. And so the Lincoln Project was then forced to kind of give a more detailed statement saying that they reject everything that John did. And, you know, they tried to say that they didn't know anything about it. And subsequent reporting has proved that that's absolutely not the case. Multiple officials, I guess you could call them, at the Lincoln Project knew in the summer. I've seen one email that was sent to them in the summer, outlining pretty specifically what Weaver was doing, and they didn't do anything about it.
So this information was inside the shop for a while. But even with that information, Weaver stuck around. You know, I'm not exactly sure at the timeline, but continuing to maintain a position of influence that could at least potentially give him access or leverage to continue doing this kind of predatory behavior, because that's what it is. You know, that statement that he thought things were consensual, when you're dangling jobs in front of people and trying to trade the promise of a job for sexual activity, that's predatory. And I just want to be very clear that that's what I'm talking about when I use that word. So this scandal broke. You know, eventually John Weaver left the Lincoln Project, right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so he sort of left on paper in the summer, which is supposed to be, according to their word, a coincidence. He had some sort of quote-unquote medical problem. So he was kind of quietly shuffled away in the summer of 2020, but by the time the election was rolling around, he was sort of back on mainstream news media representing himself as part of the Lincoln Project. So we didn't really go away. And then after all of this broke, you know, once the big papers were writing about this, the project basically fired Weaver a few weeks ago, I guess now. And that's kind of where we stand. He's no longer in anything. I think he just recently deleted his Twitter account. And Yashar actually reported recently that he's under an FBI investigation, or FBI agents have been asking about his activity. Yeah,
regarding the underage men or it's, boys,
it's not
I guess
totally,
I should say.
Or, yeah, it's not totally clear. I know one of the witnesses that was questioned, and they did ask about that, but the person that I talked to wasn't really sure, like, the scope of the FBI investigation or what potential crimes they're looking into. I don't know I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the laws behind this, but possibly some prostitution laws come into play. I mean, if you're paying people for sex across state lines, that's an issue. And then of course, when it gets to children, it's just ramped up. tenfold. So,
yeah, well, like, I guess we're just going to have to kind of wait on the feds to do their thing there. But I want to zoom out now with you for a little bit as somebody who's followed the group for a while, reported, chased on the story. You know, since this reporting has come out, have you noticed any difference in the reception that the group or its kind of most visible members has received in mainstream news outlets, specifically like cable TV? Because at some point during the election, I felt like every time, you know, I watch cable news in the morning when I'm up with my dog, and, you know, I would watch NBC or something, and it seemed like every morning or every other morning, someone from the Lincoln Project would be there, and Joe Scarborough would just be spilling his heart out, being like,
right,
the true Republicans who can't stand Trump, just like me. And it's like, you know, I would just be like, come on, man, give me a break of this shit. But my own personal feelings aside, you know, has their access to the mainstream changed at all as a result of this? Have you noticed anything that would give any indication to that?
I'd say it's changed only very recently, after the New York Times said that children were involved. That's kind of when the tide changed. You know, there was this big sort of apology that Rick Wilson tried to do. I think it was on like a YouTube live video or whatever kind of media they do now. He was actually crying. You know, there's a very weird sort of segment of the population that will not leave the Lincoln Project no matter what. They have very staunch defenders on their side. And so Rick Wilson's like tears, I think, wrangled people back in and, you know, kept their supporters, even though what he was saying was just outright lies. Like, yeah, it sucks that this guy's crying on live stream, but he was trying to say that they didn't know anything about it still after all of this reporting. And, you know, there's documented proof that all of these people knew in the summer of 2020 what Weaver was up to. You know, maybe not in regards to the children. I think that's more of a recent revelation, and Wilson kind of tried to couch his apology in that manner through that scope of just saying, you know, we didn't know about the children, but yeah, that sucks for the 20-year-old guys or the 18-year-old guys that are still very hurt by what Weaver did, and, you know, for Wilson to do that and still lie. It gets me how similar to Trump this is. Like, they're trying to get empathy while at the same time just spewing lies. And to your question about cable news, it's very true that during the election, they were on the news all the time. And I've only noticed recently a change in that, where Rick Wilson isn't on CNN every day. Or Steve Schmidt, who recently left the group, actually, in somewhat of a weird way. Like, he posted a 5-page statement saying how he was molested as a child. Like, he's half taking it seriously, but, like, also, it was the Kevin Spacey defense. Like, yeah, I'm gay, like, feel bad for me. While at the same time, like, not acknowledging all the people that he's hurt. I don't know, I just have a lot of animosity towards these people because they covered up a really bad thing. And, you know, I don't think partisanship should blind your view when it comes to this kind of harassment. So I think it's a good thing that most of cable news is now kind of restricting their platform. And certainly the money has dried up. So I don't think the project is long for, at least in this iteration, is long for any sort of political activity.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because at one point I was seeing reporting, it might have been Axios, or this feels like an Axios story, it might not be, but that the Lincoln Project was essentially planning what, like, former Obama staffers and comms people did when Trump got elected, which was like Pod Save, right? You know, starting right, like a media network or something. But it, you know, the last, especially month or so, has really, really called into question if that's even going to be viable. You know, on a personal note, I always kind of had an issue with the Lincoln Project because the role they were filling in cable news to begin with was one that I just didn't think was helpful in understanding the current moment, right? You know, like,
absolutely.
Rick Wilson would come on MSNBC, for example, and represent the principled Republican stance to Trump. And apart from maybe like Liz Cheney and Mitt Romney and like, what, five other Republicans in Congress, that kind of principled stance against Trump is like just not a thing, right?
It doesn't exist. No, it doesn't exist in the real world. I mean, it's like I said, I think the Lincoln Project was more of a play for liberals to feel good while kind of ignoring the reality. So that's a good point. Like they're representing a reality that doesn't exist, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I want to catch that. I'm sure it exists to some degree, but it's not even like close enough. Like we're talking like single digit percentage points, not enough to like flip an election or anything with a few mean TV ads.
Right.
So, you know, the future of the Lincoln Project is kind of uncertain. It's a big question mark right now, but it's hard to imagine how they will rebound from this scandal. And especially in the Biden era, you know, who are they going to attack? I guess maybe Republicans that didn't vote to impeach Trump, but, you know, their elections are a year away. Is that going to hit the same?
Right.
Again, it's just question marks. We could speculate, but I'd rather move on. So,
right.
Lessons learned. You know, you've been following the group. I've been following the group less than you, admittedly. You know, with the rise and the fall of the Lincoln Project, were there any sort of takeaways that you had, like, now that it almost seems like we're on the other side of the group's prominence, like, looking backwards? Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I think one of the main things that I would take away, kind of more on a macro level, I guess, is the whole dark money ecosystem that we have right now in politics. We touched on it briefly here, but you know, the amount of money that the Lincoln Project raised from donors and then spent on consulting companies or whatever that nobody knows who's behind them, I think is a big issue, and I think it's only going to get bigger with the rise of so many different factions in the political system right now. I would just say that a big lesson here is that we need some sort of reform in the way of exposing, or I guess exposing is not the right word, but illuminating who receives these vast amounts of money being spent on politics. You know, I think it's super detrimental to any democracy when people can A, donate unlimited amounts of money to certain PACs, and B, you don't really know where those PACs are spending the money. And in the Lincoln Project case, it turns out they were spending money on themselves. And that's sort of more of a tame example of what could happen when you have this dark money flowing through the system. My mind immediately goes to the thing that I normally research and write about, is foreign interference in elections. If we're going to have these rules where, you know, the public can't see where the political money is being spent and who's getting paid in these super PACs and whatnot, it's a great opportunity for someone like Russia or Iran or whoever, China, to pump money into the system and, you know, Americans wouldn't even know about it. And all of a sudden ads, for example, are being paid for by someone in China. So I don't know, these are kind of hypotheticals, but, you know, the big sort of money lesson that I learned from watching the Lincoln Project for so long is that we need some guidelines here, especially when it comes to political spending and donations.
So that's why you know, listeners of the show will always hear me preach, support principles, policies, not politicians, not political groups. I've been talking to Scott Stedman, founder of Forensic News, I guess accidental de facto expert on the Lincoln Project. Scott, the final question for every guest on this show goes the same. It's like this. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
I love this question, and I love that this is a feature. I thought about this a lot, and I think my mind kept going back to, this might sound really dumb, but I'm going to say it anyway, the new Twitter Spaces feature, where it's kind of like Clubhouse, but less snobby and less highbrow.
So this is a feature where, you know, a user can set up basically... would it be demeaning to call it like a conference call? It's like a conference call that any of their followers can join.
It is, yeah. It's kind of like that. It's audio only, and you're basically in a room with a ton of people and a few hosts. Taylor Lorenz at the New York Times has been doing this so well. She sets up a space, and then she'll talk to other sort of influential people in her industry. And, you know, you tap a button, you raise your hand, and the host calls on you. I don't know. It's a really cool way of doing it. It's kind of like Clubhouse, but not as, you know, you don't, there's no barrier to entry or anything like that. It's just audio. And I don't know. I just think it's a really cool sort of new thing that we're seeing on the internet. And I'm certainly going to partake as soon as I get access to it.
All right, Scott. Well, thanks for joining so much, and we'll talk soon. That was my interview with Scott Stedman, the founder of Forensic News, about the Lincoln Project. The future of the Lincoln Project largely remains to be seen, but given the criticism that it's facing and the scandals that ensnared its leadership in recent months, my forecast for the group is not particularly optimistic. In my personal opinion, for people who find themselves agreed with left-leaning political causes, handing money to a bunch of Republicans, current and former, to try to advance change in the country is terribly unwise. I think personally that money would be better spent on local issues or state issues and fighting to get control back of those state legislatures. So much happens there, and the erosion of local journalism has made accountability at the state level incredibly difficult and incredibly sparse. If we want to restore some sense of normalcy in the country, we should look to our own communities first and build up. And that's where I'm going to leave this episode. But before we get out of here, I'm going to do some plugs. If you liked this episode and you like this podcast, please consider subscribing on iTunes or whatever podcast listening app that you use. Also, a positive review in the iTunes store or on whatever app you use goes a long way to help us. It means we rank higher in search results, more people have access to it, and even if it's not a five-star review, I do periodically check those and read them to get some feedback on how the show is doing, things that could improve, etc. We distribute this podcast through Substack. There you can sign up for a free email list or a paid email list. The paid email list helps us keep this show going, and if you sign up for the paid email list, you'll be put to receive bi-weekly newsletters covering topics. You know, I write op-eds, I do a little bit of reporting here and there, do roundups of things on the internet that I think are interesting. So if you want to get those emails and get even more content like this, go to shtpost.substack.com. This has been Jared Holt, February 26th. Take care.